Well, good morning, West Heights. It's good to be together, and I think it was so good to be able to worship together. Thank you, Terry, for leading us in worship this morning. Hey, in the churches I grew up in, there was often an image of a cross prominently displayed at the front somewhere. And as a child, I used to think of it in terms of it being a decoration, right? It was often carved out of wood or stitched into a piece of fabric. Maybe it was attached to the front of the big wooden pulpit, or maybe it was hung on the wall. Sometimes it was even just set up off to the side with the seasonal decorations kind of around it, right? But that was what I was used to. And then I went to a church that was different from mine, and they had a cross too, but theirs was a little bit scarier. See, on their cross, they had this realistic statue of Jesus hanging there, and Jesus looked like he was in a lot of pain. And I didn't like those crosses. I didn't like looking at those crosses. I liked mine to be empty. You know, those crosses seemed to be a bit too real and harder to look at, where those empty crosses were easier to look at. You know, the image of a cross is an image that's intended to be central for those of us who claim to follow Jesus. It's an image that somehow captures who God is, what he's about, and what it means to follow him, all rolled up in one image. And yet, for many of us, we've become so accustomed to this picture that we can become numb to its implications until we see a vision of this image that is different. And then we might find ourselves feeling unsettled. Well, the reality of the cross is, and it should be, that it's unsettling on a whole bunch of different levels. But often we settle, what we settle for is not that unsettling. But this is where the season of Lent can be important for us. See, Lent is the season where leading up to Good Friday and Easter, when we reflect on the meaning of the cross, and we are invited to become cross-focused. And so this year, as we move towards Easter, we're going to be looking at the conversations that Jesus has with his disciples, where he talks about his coming death and what it means for those who follow him. And as we listen to these conversations, a question that we might want to ask ourselves is, how ought the cross inform or shape our relationship with things like power, the easily marginalized, leadership, wealth, and so many other things? See, in these conversations that Jesus is having with his disciples, he's not just being considerate and letting them know what to expect next, but he's inviting his disciples to be shaped by the cross. And so let's hear our scripture read for us this morning.
Matthew 16:21 to 28. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done. I tell you the truth, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom."
Thanks, Laurel, for reading scripture for us this morning. You know, as we look at this passage, I want to break it down into two sections. And the first section can be summarized by saying that Jesus' character and mission is lived out through the cross. If we were to have read the verses that came before what Laurel read for us this morning, we would hear Jesus asking his disciples who they thought he was. And Peter, as sort of the spokesperson for the group, pipes up and he declares that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah. See, Jesus was the person they believed that God was sending to rescue them. And this was bang on. But now that the disciples had identified who Jesus was, and they'd done so correctly, now Jesus is about to help them understand what God's Messiah was all about. And this is important, because despite the Old Testament depictions of the Messiah being someone who would suffer for God's people, what had developed was an expectation of a Messiah who would be more like a revolutionary leader. a Messiah who would be more like what they knew from the world around them. See, popular vision of the Messiah was that he would be someone who would destroy enemies, Israel's enemies, and make Israel great. See, Israel wanted to become a superpower. They didn't want to be oppressed anymore. They wanted to be rich. They wanted a hero who would kick the bad guys out and would fix all their problems. That's what they were looking for. And based on their experience, this could only happen through force and a certain type of leader who would lead through violence against anyone who stood in their way. And somehow, as the disciples looked to Jesus, seeing the things that he said, they believed correctly that he was God's Messiah, but their understanding of the Messiah had been clouded by their assumptions of how the world worked. Now, one of the things that we need to be aware of is the ways in which we can try to make Jesus fit our own assumptions. See, we need to recognize that we've been influenced by our culture, by our society, even by a Christian or a church culture. And we've been influenced to think about life and the world in certain ways. And yet in our passage this morning, what we are seeing Jesus doing is challenging the disciples' assumptions. And so as we watch this play out, we need to be honest that we might have our own assumptions, and we need to be open to how Jesus might challenge them. And so in our passage this morning, Jesus doesn't talk about being this glorious, inspiring, revolutionary leader. Instead, he talks about how he must go to Jerusalem to suffer and die at the hands of the religious establishment. See, the implications are that this journey of suffering is the way that God is working. In fact, if the disciples had remembered the words of the Old Testament prophets, they would remember that the Messiah would rescue and heal through sacrifice. And so Jesus here is telling his followers that God's mission to rescue and heal was not going to come through exercising violence, but through the Messiah's own humiliating death. And while the disciples don't seem to pick up on this point either, Jesus includes that he will come back to life. See, the glory that they wanted from the Messiah was not going to come through Jesus violently killing his enemies, but would come through him dying at the hands of his enemies and then overcoming death. See, in God's kingdom, the path of glory comes through sacrifice. You know, as we get to what Peter says, we recognize that the disciples, and again, Peter's just the spokesperson here, that the disciples have no framework to understand what Jesus is telling them. See, to them, what Jesus is talking about looks a whole lot like losing, not the glorious victory that they're looking forward to. And so Peter pipes up and basically rebukes Jesus and says, "No, Jesus, this isn't what we want." Or, "No, Jesus, you got it all backwards. This isn't what you're supposed to do." See, for him and for the disciples, if God's purposes are going to work out, then Jesus can't be the one who dies. Maybe other people will die, but it can't be Jesus. See, Jesus needs to be the strong one. He can't be talking about death. He needs to be inspirational. He needs to be on top. He needs to be the one leading the charge against their enemies. And what Jesus is talking about here sounds a whole lot like losing. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk about how Jesus responds to Peter. But let's just talk for a moment here about how, if we're honest, we get where the disciples are coming from on this. See, what Jesus is talking about here is not fun. It's not sexy. It's not inspirational. It's not winning. And so we could come up with a whole bunch of different scenarios that sounds better than what Jesus is talking about here. It doesn't take much. But despite the fact that we get where these disciples are coming from, we might find ourselves concluding that because Peter gets the response that he does from Jesus, that it means that Peter should not have said the things that he said. And you know what? I think this is a reflection of a church culture that at times has communicated that we are supposed to pretend like we have it all together, even in moments when we really don't. And so I think we have to appreciate Peter here. See, Peter's being honest. And it's through his honest response to Jesus that Jesus is able to speak to the misunderstandings that Peter and others had. See, the kingdom of God often seems backwards to what we know. And Jesus understands that this will cause us to have to go through a process of what could be called deconstruction. And this conversation between Jesus and the disciples is a part of this process. And so instead of concluding that we shouldn't do what Peter did, let's recognize that it's through the process of asking questions, even reacting and saying, "Whoa, I'm not sure I like this," or "I'm not sure what to think about this," that moments like these can become opportunities for Jesus to engage us at a real level and perhaps confronting our assumptions and replacing it with his truth. Now, getting back to what Jesus says to Peter, Jesus says, You gotta love it. Get behind me, Satan. And let's be honest, this sounds a tad intense. I mean, is Jesus actually looking at Peter and saying, you are the evil one. You are the devil. You are the Satan. No, he's not. What Jesus is saying is that behind the assumptions behind what Peter is saying is something that's not of God. Peter's assumptions about God's Messiah, what life is all about, are a reflection of God's presence and how, of sin's presence and how sin's presence has infected our world. And not only that, but in saying, get behind Satan, he's identifying that within Peter's comments is the temptation for Jesus to step outside of his role as God's Messiah and to instead step into a human understanding of what glory and victory might look like. And in many ways, this should remind us of Jesus' experience in the wilderness, where three times Satan tries to tempt Jesus to leave his mission to embody God's love and God's rescuing purposes and to instead embrace riches and fame and comfort. And in the end, Jesus tells Satan to get behind him, to go away. Well, in our passage today, Jesus is saying to Peter, hey, do you know that God's ways are not the same as what you experience and what the people around you think is important? Do you know that? Rather, I am embodying for you the God who is love, the God who loves those that we might be tempted to call our enemies, the God who willingly sacrifices so that people like you can know what it means to really be alive. See, God's ways look like serving. They look like setting aside our pride. And Peter, you don't get this because you're looking at this whole thing all wrong. And what Jesus is doing is he's inviting Peter to look at life through the lens of the coming cross. You know, for us, as we look at who Jesus is and what Jesus is all about, we are invited to think about how we might be looking at things all wrong. In 1 Corinthians, Paul says that Jesus' crucifixion will seem like foolishness to some folks. Why? Well, because the Jesus approach to life looks different than what we experience in our daily lives. And yet it's through what Jesus will do on the cross that we see the generous, over-the-top, life-giving love of God at work. And this brings us to our second point this morning, which is that to follow Jesus is to walk in the way of the cross. Now, I feel like I'm at a bit of an interesting point in my life. You know, I'm old enough now to be able to recognize how I'm becoming like my parents, much to the chagrin of a younger version of me. I'm able to recognize that some of my habits, my mannerisms, my default settings are like my mom and my dad. And of course, this happened as a result of, you know, years of them investing in me and all that time that we spent together. And of course, there's some shared genetics and however that plays into this. And so, you know, I've picked up some stuff from my parents and most of it's good, so that's okay. And then I'm also at this point of life where I'm able to look at my kids, even at their young age, and I can see how sometimes they're like little me's, and I'm really hoping they pick up the good stuff and they don't pick up the bad stuff. I'm really hoping that's the case. Somebody reassure me in the comments that they'll only pick up the good stuff, right? I don't know. Well, in some ways, this is what Jesus is getting at in what he says to his disciples in the second half of our passage this morning. You know, as they've spent time with him, as they've watched him, as they've listened to him, as they've been in conversation with him, the intended hope is that they will be transformed by these experiences and that they will start to do life like Jesus. That his influence will shape how they approach every aspect of their lives. And as Jesus talks about the coming cross, he turns to his disciples and he says to them that if they want to follow him, that they need to apply the cross to their own lives as well. Jesus says, whoever wants to be my disciple must take up their cross and follow me. Now, for some of us, we've been around church long enough that we've heard this verse so many times that we don't even think about it hardly anymore. But really, this verse is a radical invitation to pledge ourselves to Jesus. See, Jesus here is speaking to friends of his who maybe weren't fully understanding the depth of what it meant to follow him. There were some folks who were likely there just because they liked the things that he said, or others who were impressed by his miracles. And there were other folks who were hoping that Jesus was the one who was going to lead the revolution. But what Jesus says here is about whether or not they really understand what it takes to be a part of this thing that Jesus is doing. In Jesus' day, the cross was a tool of execution. And when someone carried their cross, they were usually walking to their own death. See, their life as they had known it was over. As Jesus looks to his own death, he invites his followers and he invites us to join him in that journey, to walk away from life as we know it, to walk away from life as we only ever assumed it could be, and to instead walk in his footsteps, walk in the footsteps of Jesus in the way of sacrifice, forgiveness, love, and generosity. And so in these verses, Jesus goes on to talk about gaining the whole world and losing your soul, and about the temptation to save our lives. And what Jesus is getting at here is he's speaking to an approach of life that is about holding too tightly to the things that we have. He's speaking to an approach to life that is about getting ahead. It's about preserving or improving our reputation or our standing with other people. It's about gaining wealth and other things that are important to our culture or our society. And what Jesus is saying is that if this is what our lives are all about, then at the end of the day, we're going to find ourselves empty and with nothing. And this is not Jesus talking about God inflicting some sort of punishment on us, but as a reflection of the reality that these things were never designed to carry the burden that we often attach to them. They were never designed to be the point of life. Rather, Jesus is saying, if you want to find riches, if you want to discover what life is all about, then it comes through this upside down, backwards approach of laying down our lives, laying down our pride, our ambitions, our position, our privilege, giving all of that to Jesus. And in doing this, we find the life that God wants to give us. And for some of us this morning, the place to start is by, in a quiet moment, giving ourselves to Jesus, saying, Jesus, I want to follow you. Help me follow you. And a statement like that is a first step, is one of the first steps that we take in following Jesus. And in some ways, this is something that we all need to do each and every day. Jesus, I want to follow you. Help me follow you. For others of us, we have taken that first step. And we took that first step privately, but the next step for us is to express that inward commitment to Jesus outwardly through baptism. See, baptism is an outward expression of our inward posture towards Jesus. The Apostle Paul talks about how baptism is a powerful way that we identify with the death and the resurrection of Jesus. See, as we go under the water, we are symbolizing that we are dying to ourselves, that we are being buried with Jesus. And as we are coming up out of the water, we are being raised to new life. Baptism is a spiritual rite that symbolizes dying to ourselves and embracing the life of Jesus. And it does so in such a way that declares our intentions, that it is a declaration that we want to follow Jesus, that he's the most important thing in our lives, and that we are going to do our best with God's help to daily take up our cross and to follow him. And we do so in front of others so that they can cheer us on and encourage us as we follow Jesus. And so perhaps for some of us, the next step should be baptism. You know, years ago we said yes to Jesus quietly, but now is the time to step into it more boldly. And let me just remind us that baptism isn't for perfect people, but it's an expression of our commitment to Jesus and a declaration of our intentions. And so it doesn't mean that we need to be perfect, but it's about us saying, you know, we're moving in this direction. We're moving towards Jesus with Jesus. And this is what we want our lives to be about. And for some of us, this is something that we need to do. Now, we're talking about baptism at a bit of a funny time, aren't we? I mean, we won't be gathering for an in-person church service for quite some time, you know, not anytime soon. But it doesn't mean that we can't talk about how to do baptisms in creative ways. And so if you are interested, please let me know. And we're working and we're thinking about some creative and meaningful ways to be able to practice, to be able to do baptism if anybody's interested. And so please let us know if you are interested in baptism. Now, a second way that we might act on our message this morning is through being generous and sacrificial with the things that we have. You know, having the cross shape our lives means that we will see the things that we have as not being just for us, but we will see them as being gifts that we have been given, And we are given so that we can share with others generously, even sacrificially, when there are those who have needs. And so this morning I want to talk about something that I'm actually pretty excited about, and it's a way that we can practice generosity as a church family, and we're calling it the Community Center Collection. And this initiative is an opportunity for us to meet some of the tangible needs of those in our neighborhood. See, next door at the Forest Heights Community Center, that's just beside the fire between, you know, us and the grocery store here. Each week they host a food distribution program, and they regularly run out of certain items. And this got us thinking that one way that we can serve our neighbors by asking them if there are certain items that we can collect for them. And they love this idea and are going to let us know 2 to 3 items that we can collect for them each month. And as you're going to notice, not all of these items are food. In fact, some of their most the items that they need most are not food. So let me tell you how this is going to work. At the beginning of each month, we're going to let you know what items are needed via the blog, via our weekly emails, or our Sunday announcements. We're going to let you know what items are needed. And the idea is that you can buy 1 or 2 of these items the next time you go buy your groceries. And then you'll drop them off at the donation bin that you'll find on the ramp to our portable here. There's a wooden ramp, and as you walk up it, you'll find a donation bin there. And then we're going to arrange the delivery to the community center. And so what we're going to do is the first couple weeks of every month, we'll just let you know, and then we'll collect those items, and then we'll take them over, and then we'll wait to the beginning of the next month, and then we'll do it again. And we're thinking we're going to do this through till June, and then we'll see what we do from there. And this month, what they're looking for are diapers, specifically sizes 2 to 6. They always run out of, never have enough. So diaper size 2 to 6, sanitary pads, and toothpaste. What you'll notice here is that, you know, there are items here that cost more and items that cost less. And so if you are somebody who can buy diapers, please buy the diapers. But if toothpaste, if that's what you can manage, then maybe buy a pack of toothpaste and bring that our way. But we're hoping that this is something that we can all get in on. And the hope is that we can overwhelm in a good way our neighbors through the gifts that we can give by meeting some really practical needs. And so we're going to start it this month and really start it this week, actually. That bin should be out there as you're listening to this, so you can buy these items and drop them off in the bin this week. That would be fantastic. But yeah, this is just one practical way that we can practice generosity by meeting the needs of our neighbors, and we can even do so sacrificially. So thank you for your generosity in helping us out with this. You know, as we close this morning, as we close this morning, we are going to revisit a song that we sang earlier, and we're going to use it as our closing prayer. The song, Christ is Enough, invites us to focus on Jesus and invites us to make Jesus our focus, recognizing the role of the cross in shaping who we are. It's a song that invites us to declare our intentions to follow him. And so for some of us, you know, who haven't taken that first step to follow Jesus, and singing this song might be our first step, saying, I am following Jesus. And for others of us, it will be a recommitment, a reaffirmation. And so let's sing this as our closing prayer, saying, Jesus, we are saying you are enough for us. I want to follow you. Help us follow you. Let's sing together.
Christ is enough for me. Christ is enough for me. Everything I need is in you. Everything I need, I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. I have decided to Christ is enough for me. Christ is enough for me. Everything I need is in you. Everything I need. Christ is enough for me.